The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It is a numbers game here on a Tuesday. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin to my right, a new friend over behind us over here. Watching his backpack for him as he heads about this the D around here in Las Vegas. Drew Denson going to join us a little bit later in the program, as is Paul Carr, as is Paul Sporer. So we have a great lineup for you guys today. But, Kelly, we got to get into the NBA from last night. We see an excellent, excellent game between the Pacers and the Knicks. The Knicks pull it out 121 to 117 when it was all said and done. Another Herculean performance from Brunson, a no-show by Halliburton, and we go into a game in which the Pacers were leading for a good portion of the game. The Knicks down the line were able to close it out. I look at this as, I know that there was a lot of people who look at this and say, like, man, this Pacers team, they blew it, they blew it, they blew it. I don't necessarily really look at it that way as much as I do that the Knicks are a very, very good team that kept it close enough to where in the NBA is the, let me say it, a game of runs. You know, it's a NBA, it's a game of runs. They go on a run, they do what they need to do, and then close it out. They win the fourth quarter 39-30, and by winning the fourth quarter 39-30, they end up with a four-point win.
Yeah, it was yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it was. I mean, for the Pacers, there's definitely some good things to take away from that game. I mean, if you're anybody like me, who was holding, you know, heavy Knicks series tickets. Those were a sweaty last few minutes. That's for sure. You knew the Pacers were going to have the advantage. There was few places they had an advantage in this series, in my opinion. But the bench was one of them, and the bench kind of kept them in this game throughout. T.J. McConnell, huge night, 18 points, 9 for 16.
I was shocked he was able to do in last night what he was able to do in that first. I didn't think that T.J. McConnell was going to be able to do that again in this series. And listen, I understand small sample size, this one game, but in 22 minutes, like you said, he was a factor in this thing.
Yeah. I mean, so much so to a point where, like, it's you felt like there needed to be, like, adjustments for T.J. McConnell, which is, you know, something to be said. But, I mean, end of day, great. I mean, you're talking about solid three-point shooting from the Knicks. I mean, Jalen Brunson, how much more can you say? I mean, this guy just continues to put this team on his back offensively, getting it done. Brunson, Hart, DiVincenzo, those three having huge games again. And yeah, you know, they closed it out and, you know, did make their shots when they needed to down the stretch, and, you know, some questionable officiating thrown in there.
Yeah, well, to further emphasize here on Brunson, Hart, and DiVincenzo, Ian Begley is a beat writer for the Knicks. He put this out that Brunson, Hart, and DiVincenzo scored or assisted on 109 of the Knicks' 121 points in the game one win. Brunson, of course, went for 43 on 26 shots. That joins Michael Jordan, Jerry West, and Bernard King as the only players to score 40-plus in four straight playoff games. Hart had 13-8 with three steals in this one as well, Kelly. So, again, a massive production from those three guys where they scored or assisted on 109 of the 121 scored by the Knicks.
Yeah, they're huge. And this is, I mean, I think it's one of the big questions with the Knicks going forward, right, is this sustainable? Because I think these guys have been playing like this for the bulk of the playoffs so far, and when they do, this team looks very, very dangerous to anybody. I don't care who they're playing. But, you know, can the three of those guys keep up that level of play is going to be a big-time question. And I think as far as last night, we haven't really talked to you much about this series. I was loaded up on some Knicks series bets, but game one I was scared of. I was scared because of coming off of that series against the 76ers. It felt like the opportunity for Indiana to possibly go in and steal game one and make this interesting. Them coming up short just at the end, it's going to be interesting to see how this affects the Pacers going forward. Like you said, Halliburton.
That's the thing for me, right? It was like if the Pacers were going to have any shot in this series, because I was on the, I think the Knicks are a better team. I thought that the Knicks were going to win this game, win this series, et cetera. But the X factor was, okay, hey, listen, if Halliburton can somehow channel Halliburton from the beginning of the season, then maybe there's a chance in this Pacers, which, by the way, I got, like, super excited when they traded for Pascal Siakam. I have a Pacers Eastern Conference ticket in the account, which I know is dead. I mean, it's dead. Because this was based off the fact that I was super excited about the way Halliburton was playing, you know, at the beginning of the year. He gets injured, comes back, has not looked the same at all. By the way, only 2 of 6. He shot only 6 times in this game. 2 of 6, 6 points to go along with 3 turnovers. It's if he no-shows, they have no shot in this series.
So, and it's a trickle-down effect, right? Yeah. Because you can, but when you have a defensive expert like OG Anunoby, right, that you can deploy so many different ways, when you know that Tyrese Halliburton's going to be a non-factor and you can just stick him on Siakam and he really makes the rest of your matchups a little bit simpler, that's a problem, yeah.
Yeah, it just, to me, I gave the out in the handicap, basically, of the out being if Halliburton can somehow at least, maybe he was not going to be Halliburton from beginning of the season, but maybe Halliburton could figure out a way to be 85% of what he was, 90% of what he was, because he's been about 60% of what he was, and he was not even that last night. And Kelly, the fact that it was only a 4-point victory for the Knicks, as you said, does say something about these role players for the Pacers, but how sustainable is that? You have a 50% shooting night from Siakam, you have a 50% shooting night from Turner, you get an above 50% shooting night out of Toppin, Jackson, McConnell, all these guys. I mean, they played about as well as they could play with the no-show from Halliburton, and it still wasn't good enough.
Yeah, the Turner part's huge, because I think he was kind of the X factor for me on the Indiana side coming in, and like he had a big game, right? And can he, if he can keep doing this, I can keep Pacers in it, but you know, should you expect that? I don't know. I think as regardless as the series goes on, I mean, you'd love it to be over at 4 if we're both involved in the Knicks. Yeah. You'd love it to be over at 4, but I think the Knicks, even as we saw last series, the more this goes on, the stronger they're just going to get, in my opinion. So it's going to be interesting to see, but that was, man, I think if you were on the Pacers, you needed that one last night.
Yeah, I think that one did slip away from you, certainly on the road. You talk about Miles Turner. There was a bit of controversy towards the end of this one, of course, officiating much bigger in the next game that we're going to talk about, because there was all kinds of people losing their mind about that one. But Miles Turner did have something to say about the end of that game.
I just, you know, just in my experience in this league, I think it's the best when the players decide the outcome of the game. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, it happened. You know, we reviewed it. They still called it a legal screen, but it's the playoffs, man. Like, I feel like DiVincenzo did a good job of selling it. And, you know, for the most part, you can't leave the game to be decided by the refs. So we have to take accountability as well. So, of course, it's right at the game. I'm a little fresh with my emotions about it. But we know at the end of the day that, you know, we can't get to that position. So I think the last 2-minute report, we're all looking forward to that coming out.
Great response, in my opinion, by him. He let it be known that he didn't necessarily like the way that it went down, but also said, hey, look, you know, we reviewed it. It held up. It is what it is. We put ourselves in the situation to have it be like that anyway. There were several leads in which they had erased throughout the course of the game. I don't know what you thought about it. By the letter of the law, was it a moving screen?
Yes.
Do you see that call get called very often in that situation? You don't. Did DiVincenzo sell it amazingly? Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on there. It was unfortunate that the timing of it, but again, letter of the law, yes, called correctly. You just don't see it called right there.
Yeah, that's you just said it. I think you just put it perfectly. You're going to hear this a lot today. I've heard it a lot today already. But last 2-minute report's going to come out. That's going to stand as a call. The bigger one was the kicked ball that was not a kicked ball.
Non-reviewable.
That is not reviewable. And the Pacers were about to force a turnover and go out in transition and get an easy bucket on the other end, probably. Ends up being a Knicks 3, so that's a 5-point swing, essentially, that you get in that game. I mean, again, those of us with Knicks tickets maybe didn't mind some of these calls so much, but that one was way more brutal, actually, than that screen.
It's a whole different conversation, too. It's like, why can you not review? I mean, why can you not review that? It's something you should be able to look and say, did the person kick the ball or not? So we go to Timberwolves and the Nuggets. Wolves get it done big time, 106-80. You look at this, Jokic, 5 of 13, 16 points. He did have 16 boards and 8 assists, and sometimes that, you know, Jokic doesn't always have to show up on the scoreboard to have a huge effect on a game. He did have 16 boards and 8 assists, like I said. However, Kelly, you have a guy that it's more what stands out to me more than anything is just the efficiency or lack thereof with Jokic so far, because this is a guy that shot 58% in the regular season. He is now 42% combined in the 2 games against the Wolves here. And like I said, it's not necessarily so much that he didn't contribute. 16 boards and 8 assists. We see games all the time with Jokic where he scores about 20, but has a massive rebounding game, massive assist game. But he's also really efficient when he does all that. The efficiency is not there for Jokic so far in this. Jamal Murray, 3 of 18, 0 for 4 from downtown, 8 points for him. That's the box score right there of a losing effort for this team. And not only was it a losing effort, it was a blowout.
Yeah, this was stunning to me. This was a spot. I was on the Nuggets yesterday. It felt like if you had any shred of respect for that team of going forward and what their thoughts were this postseason, that was a spot I thought you had to play last night. Timberwolves, to their credit, no Rudy Gobert. That comes out a little bit later in the afternoon. He's going to miss the game due to the birth of his child. He's not even there, and it's no problem. Yeah. No problem for the Wolves. I mean, this – and it says a little bit about both teams, but, I mean, the Nuggets' dysfunction is evident right now, and it's just lack of players, lack of health. Jamal Murray's not there. And obviously, that's the story of the game. That's what me and you were texting about last night. I mean, Murray's not healthy. This Denver Nuggets team –
it's obviously frustrating him.
It's obviously frustrating him. I mean, Malone losing is cool. Jamal Murray losing is cool. I've never seen – Jamal Murray's not that guy.
Yeah. Threw a heat pad onto the court. Before that, had tried to throw another – he threw a towel that he tried to throw onto the court.
I didn't see the towel part till this morning.
Yeah.
That makes this even more damning to me, Matt. The fact that he tried it twice.
Yeah. So here's the – I know people are going to debate this. And listen, he very well may not get suspended, but I can tell you this. If he doesn't, it's special treatment. Because anybody else does that, if it's not the playoff, whatever, they're getting suspended for that. They're going to suspend it for that.
I know it doesn't happen, but if you're going to suspend guys for coming onto the court, throwing stuff into the crowd, someone throwing something on the court should easily be suspended.
Yeah, we'll continue to talk about this game last night. Where would they go from here, talking about the Nuggets, when we come back here on a numbers game?
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you've been sitting around waiting to get a VSiN Pro subscription going, man, I bet you they're going to give me a better offer at some point down the line. You were right. Good job on holding out, because for $199, we're actually going to give you 14 months instead of 12. Yes, 2 months absolutely free. You go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use the promo code ANG. And when you do, you are going to get 14 months instead of 12 for $199. That is less than 50 cents a day. So go in. VSiN Pro subscription. VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code ANG. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin in. I am sitting in for Gil Alexander, who I don't know. Maybe is on vacation this week doing who knows what. You know what I'm going to say? He's in Antigua. That's what I'm going with. I'm just going to go with Antigua.
He's over in California.
No, let's say Antigua. It's sexier.
Okay, sure.
It's sexier.
Yeah,
he's down in Antigua doing Gil things in Antigua.
He's driving all over the state of California, so I'm not really jealous.
Yeah, just doing, he's over in Antigua doing Antigua things. Putting a bow on that Timberwolves and Nuggets game from last night, Kelly. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who look at this and say, is this thing over? And with it being 2-0, and I got to say, so I thought that the Wolves were going to be able to give the Nuggets some trouble, considering they have three legit bigs and we're going to be able to put three legit bigs rotating on Jokic, right? So the thing that I thought may be a factor in this series was when Cat is on him, he's able to do one of his skill sets, and then you move it over, and then when Naz Reid is on him, you're able to do another skill set, and then when Gobert's on him, you're... So I thought that maybe they might be able to not let him settle in, right? Because sometimes you see Jokic where, okay, they're playing me this way, so tonight I'm the scorer, right?
Yeah.
Then, and it's like, oh, they're playing me this way, so tonight I'm the distributor. Mm-hmm. And then whatever. Well, now rotating the three different bigs, the three different types of defenses, the three different ways that those guys can play him, I thought that maybe that could confuse or at least neutralize him just a tad. You're never going to shut him completely down. I am shocked at how much they have been able to do that so far through the first couple of games. And I will say this, I don't think it's over, but I think it is going to be a big time task for them to come back from 0-2.
Yeah, I'm kind of beating myself up on this one. This is, it kind of applies to the Mavericks Thunder series we'll talk about here in a bit as well. But the, this was one where I liked the Timberwolves in the series. I had the price a little bit off though, and I thought it was a little too much the Timberwolves way, so I laid off it, didn't bet it. Man, they're steamrolling. I think you're gonna have to. I mean, the guys might be likely dealing with a suspension. Jamal Murray.
Yeah,
I think you got to see a completely different Jamal Murray come back. If that occurs after that suspension comes. he comes back from that suspension, he's got to be a next level player like we've seen him before in the past, or else this team's done. Timberwolves are too good. They just for a team, if you have watched this team all season, like this is who they've been like through the regular season, and they're just getting better and better and better as it goes on. And playoffs are not seeming to faze them at all. And for all the people I see out there tweeting about Phoenix, and maybe they're not so bad. No, they're still bad. They're still bad. They're still a complete failure of the season.
I will not give you that much.
Yeah,
that
no, is, I'm just not is, giving you that, though.
That is not going to happen. We did have hockey happen last night, Kelly. The Bruins.
Oh, Matt, real quick. I did bet game three on Minnesota side. That was just kind of assuming Jamal Murray is probably going to be out. I think I grabbed it at 3.5, 4. It's out to 4.5, 5 now. I think if you can get in at 4, 4.5, there's fours out there. I think you can get in under 5. I still like it. Nuggets are on their heels right now, man. This is not looking good. Going back to Minnesota, Rudy Gobert is going to be back. Jamal Murray might be out. Everything I've seen so far, a much better team is in Minnesota. So, I laid it pretty quickly last night, kind of expecting suspension news coming down the line.
Over in the NHL, game one of the second round between the Bruins and the Panthers. Bruins get it done on the road 5-1. It was a scoreless first period, then a 3-1 Bruins advantage in the second period. They add on two more, one of the empty net variety in the third period, and take that one 5-1. Move on 1-0 in this series. Kelly, we spent a whole segment breaking down basketball because I know how to do that, and I can't sit here and tell you I can't break down the hockey game. All I can tell you it was 5-1. I had it on. I watched it. They put it in the net more than the other ones did.
Yeah, the worst is I had it on a TV early. Yeah. And then I flipped it back on late, and then it was 5-1 already. What are you supposed to do when it's 5-1?
I mean, listen, I can break down basketball, football with you, baseball all day long. I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you the intricacies of what went on that hockey on the rink last night in the ice. I can't do it.
I mean, pretty clearly, the Bruins were the better team last night.
Yeah, there it is, 5-1.
They proved it, 5-1.
Yeah, so
Panthers, we got to rise up, all right? Sunrise, come on, let's get it together for game two. I'm a Panthers fan as of right now, so let's go.
Yeah, and there we have it. A couple of news items we'll get to a little bit later, but don't want to skip over what we got going on here tonight, Kelly. We got the Cavs and the Celtics. That is Celtics 12-point favorites, 210 the total. If you think the Cavs win this thing outright, plus 470 on the money line. And then the Mavs Thunder, that is Thunder 3.5-point favorites, 218. If you think the Mavericks win the thing outright, plus 136. Starting with that first game, you could make a case, I guess, for, I mean, 12 points is a lot of points.
It's up to 12.5 here at Circa.
Yeah, I mean,
I am a little surprised. Who's coming in today and running to late 12?
Right. I just don't know. You know, I just don't know, man.
That's basically going to be the summary. This whole series throughout, I think. I bet the Celtics to win at 5. I mean, the thing, I think that if I want to ruffle feathers here, I could make an argument that the Cavaliers have the best player. It's just, you know, they're the next 5, 6 are on the Celtics side with no Jared Allen. I bet them to win at 5. I threw a little bit on that Celtics to win at 5. I think that knowing the Celtics and how they usually play and they take a lot of threes, could there be a bad variance game where they drop one to the Cavs here at some point? Yeah, I think that's completely possible. It's really hard for me to see
the Cavs aren't a very good team.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to see them losing more than a game.
They're just not a very good team. I mean, it's one of those things where I could sit here and we could take the next 3 minutes doing the what if, play the what if game, and woo. It's like, no, man, the Celtics are going to win the series. They are. They're just going to win the series. Like, you have a Cavs team that is going to rely. You're going to need Spider Mitchell. You're going to have him go for 40, like, to even have a shot in any of these games.
If he goes for 50 every night, how many games do they win?
One.
I don't even know. Like, yeah. I'll go 2. If he went for 50 every night, I'll say they get 2.
All right. So we at least have that. I mean, I guess the only thing we can say from a bettable standpoint, if you do look at the prop market, right, like Donovan Mitchell is set at 27.5 right now. Kelly, he might not get there because he is just off. It is not going to be for lack of trying. He is going to shoot every bit of 25 times in this game, if not more. And so 27.5 seems pretty low to me.
I am with you. Yeah. I didn't even really check that out because I mean, I didn't really think about it. Just kind of assumed it would be a lot higher.
Yeah. He's going to play, unless it is a just absolute blowout.
Right.
He's going to play 40 minutes in the game. So you're getting 40 minutes out of him with a guy that's going to put it up 25 times. I mean, he might just be completely off. And if he's off, then there's a way that he couldn't get here. But I think that he gets there.
I mean, but, you're going up against some of the best perimeter defenders in the league on the Celtics side, for sure.
Yeah.
But what you just said is all that matters. Like, the guy's going to put it up a bajillion times because
the volume is there.
Yeah, the volume is going to be there.
Yeah. The volume is there. So
I think
just
I'm betting that.
Yeah.
I'm betting that.
Mavs and Thunder, a much more interesting series in this one. As we said, Thunder, 3.5-point favorites, 218 the total, plus 136 if you think the Mavs win this thing. Outright, Kelly, I mean, if we look at this, no Maxi Kleber, and I think that people might not really understand what a pretty big loss that is for him, because he's a fairly versatile player for this Mavs team. I mean, you can play him at the four. You can, if you want to go smaller, you can play him at the five. He's a guy that kind of like adds a little bit of a wrinkle on the offensive side of everything, too. And I mean, he's definitely done for the series. If they're going to reevaluate him in a couple weeks, I mean, he's probably done for the whole playoffs with all this for the Mavs team. And I'm not saying that means the Mavericks can't win this series. I'm saying that it's a bigger loss for them than I think people are giving credit for.
This series, for sure. I think they played him too much last series. I was kind of in that camp of, okay, you've got these couple other bigs with Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford that you kind of brought in for a reason. Yeah. Kleber's been around forever. I think he's great, like you just broke down, great in specific matchups. Little smaller ball you're going to see in this series. I think he would have been nice to have, and you know, just kind of
because you could run him out at the five,
right? Exactly,
and be able to match up with what the Thunder are going to do when they try to go small. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. This is I bet the over tonight. I bet on the over 216.5. You know, man, totals, I'll bet a little bit more in the playoffs and not a huge totals better. And, man, it's mainly unders in the playoffs for me. But I thought there was a little value on the over here. You're talking about two top seven teams in pace during the regular season. Now, Luka Doncic dealing with his knee injury has definitely been playing slower. They're going to want to slow it down in the half court a little bit more. I think the Thunder, though, will be looking actively to get out and run, attack the paint like they do in every single game that they play. Expecting a high up game. Up-tempo game from the Thunder, kind of forcing the Mavericks' hand in that. This is just talking about the series price real quick, man. I don't know if you did anything with this. I've got Mavericks futures that I'm just kind of going to be riding and hoping and praying here for. Look, they're a great team. They're a great team right now. Have looked awesome since the All-Star break. To me, at this price, there's some value on the Thunder side. If I wasn't involved at all, I'd probably be looking there. I'd probably be looking Thunder a little bit game to game here, especially to start with Lucas still having knee issues.
That's the thing. If Luca was 100% healthy, I don't think it'd be a thing for me. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like the Nuggets Timberwolves price was just a little bit off to me. So if I was going to go anywhere, I wasn't involved, it would be the Thunder.
Let's talk all things sports with our friend of the program, Drew Densick, when we come back here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's A Numbers Game here on a Tuesday. Matt Brown in for Gil. Our next guy, you know him, you love him, you find him over at NBC Sports Edge, Deep Dive Podcast on Twitter Machine, Whale_Capper. He is Drew Densick. Drew, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good morning, and great to see you again, Matt. It's been too long.
I know.
My plans to come out to Vegas have busted recently, so I haven't gotten to come see you, but yeah.
Drew, I had a prior engagement and wasn't able to get on to the NFL Draft Megapod this year, which was good for the listeners because I got absolutely destroyed. So I'm glad I didn't make it this year. So that's pretty good. We normally catch each other at least that time of year anyway.
Yeah, you and I are in good company. I did not do well in the draft either. Yes, of course, the common theme really the 2024 so far, like I'm just, you know, cruising along, grinding NBA, everything's going well, cruising along, grinding tennis, everything's going well. And then like the big events, like the Super Bowl, I thought the Niners were going to win. They did not. March Madness, I was against the Huskies. And of course, they not only won, but covered every single game. Yes, Masters, it was a bloodbath. The draft was a bloodbath. And it couldn't find a winner in the Kentucky Derby. So the big kind of marquee betting events that, you know, people tend to remember, I'm running pretty cold.
Yeah, I saved the listener some money by not making the draft podcast this year. That's for sure. But real quick on the Derby, though. We were talking a little bit before we came on air, the experience itself, though. Let's talk outside of the betting thing. You know, I do a show with Mike Somich, and I kind of grilled him on this whenever we came in on Sunday, and actually gave him more of a position to kind of defend the process that goes into horse handicapping. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the biggest race that gets the most attention. That being said, it's also the one with the highest amount of variance, the much, much harder to predict than any other horse race you're going to be handicapping on a day-to-day basis. And so it's pretty easy, I think, for people who aren't in it very often to come in on Sunday morning and start pointing fingers and going like, see, no one knows anything. Y'all are all stupid, and this is the stupidest thing ever. But it's 20 horses. It's the gigantic race. Any little thing can change the way it goes. And honestly, the Kentucky Derby, anyone that does a lot of the horse, I would tell you, that's not really where you make money. You make money on all the other races all year long.
Yeah, that's no question. But, you know, we're like moths to a flame, Matt. it's the toughest puzzle to solve. It's the toughest challenge. The white whale of a lot of people who play horse racing is hitting the superfecta in the Derby, because you think it's hard to pick the winner. Try picking the top four. but the race is so dependent on you know, the early pace in particular, and whether that sets up opportunities for closers or whether the lead is going to be able to be maintained. Guessing what that pace is going to be just depends on evaluating the early speed horses, where they're drawn, whether they'll break well. And all of these are huge, just wild question marks. And so, ultimately it was not something that I saw coming, that, Kenny McPeak and his jockey, Brian Hernandez, they did the Dull Oaks Derby double, and they did it the same way in both races, which was get on the rail and ride that golden rail, because the second, third, and fourth slots effectively on the track coming down the home stretch in particular, but also kind of around the back, were softer, and the inside was tighter, and the inside was just, it was a better footing, because of some of the conditions, the rain we had on Friday in particular. And, Brian Hernandez is a guy that likes to ride the rail at Churchill Downs. That's his, that's his MO. And, he did it with, absolute perfection two times in the two most important horse races of the spring. So, congratulations to him. Congratulations to McPeak and all the connections. Mystic Dan is, he's a very lucky horse, man. Two just absolute golden rail wins in his 3-year-old campaign so far. I would say that if you see him, kind of at short price, I'm not buying it. I mean, he's good horse, but he's not that good. So, and in fact, if it was a mile and a quarter and an inch, I think he probably loses to Sierra Leone. So, it is what it is, but, the Kentucky Derby experience remains probably one of the highlights, if not the highlight of my sports year, just because being there to be part of the coverage and, get the access to, everything that's going on at Churchill Downs and, meeting people and, shaking hands it's a really, really good time. So, all told, I really hope to get invited back to cover next year.
Talking to our buddy Drew Dinsa, you can find him over on NBC Edge as well as his podcast Deep Dive. Drew, I want to look forward before we look back, before we talk about last night. We've done a bunch of recapping here, so I do want to see if you have any thoughts here on Cavs, Celtics, Mavs, Thunder. So let's start with that first one. Cavs, Celtics sitting at 12 right now in favor of the Celtics, yeah. 210 the total. Kelly and I were sitting here saying, I guess we could try to talk ourselves in circles as a way that the Cavs win this series. I'm not going to do that. I think there's going to be I don't see it. I don't know how it goes. We were saying, even if Donovan Mitchell goes for 50 a game, how many games do you actually give the Cavs here? So what do you look at this series, and what do you think about the 12 tonight?
Yeah, so I laid 11 on the open with the Celtics, and I took some Celtics 4-0 at plus 150.
Yeah.
I don't think that the Cavs, you can talk yourself into circles that the Cavs win a game in this series. It's kind of like an absolute death matchup for them in every way. when you are, and this kind of goes for, this is a perfect analog to what you've already seen, by the way, with a better team in the Timberwolves Nuggets series. Like when you're depending on, guard play and you are up against a team that has elite wings, and the guards are such an enormous part of your offense, then that puts you under enormous stress. And the Cavaliers are even a more distilled version of that than the Nuggets, where they're effectively a one-man show. I mean, it's Donovan Mitchell and to a lesser, much lesser degree, Darius Garland kind of with the ball in their hands, who are making things happen. Caris LeVert from the second unit taking on that role. The bigs offer very little In terms of offensive, production, and there's no creation whatsoever. So now you're up against a Celtics team whose defense I think is going to be absolutely smothering. No idea how Donovan Mitchell is going to find any space against this lineup. I think the absence of Porzingis against a better team would matter, but Horford is kind of the ideal, mobile spacing big to have on the floor with the rest of these guys. So swapping Horford for Porzingis is maybe even a small upgrade for this particular matchup. And I think the Celtics they need to start to kind of ramp things up a little bit. I don't think they can afford to come into the Eastern Conference Finals flat against potentially a feisty Knicks team. So, I think they're going to take these games pretty seriously. And I think it's a fun play to look for Celtics to come through with the sweep.
Well, let's talk about one that might be a little bit more interesting in the Mavs and the Thunder. 3.5 currently over at DraftKings in favor of the Thunder. 218 your total if you think the Mavs went outright, plus 136. Series price a little bit swayed out of a coin flip. It was coin flippy there for a while. I think it's 120 and even money now on this. This one I'm pretty excited about to see how it all plays out. What say you?
Yeah, so I'm holding a decent amount of Thunder to win the West at 5-1. I'm holding a decent amount of Thunder to win this series at minus 115. I think my last time I looked, and let me just double check. Yeah, my fares for this series are minus 132 for the Thunder. And I don't, this is not to disrespect the Mavericks really, but what you saw in that Clippers series I thought was pretty telling, where it took them four games to really kind of solve sort of how they wanted to really, I guess maybe till the third game, till their offense really kind of started clicking to the degree it should have. And some of people could say, well, yeah, Luka was hurt and he's getting healthier. Okay, fine. Well, I would point to, it was a tough matchup with the switchability and the way that the wings were playing defensively for the Clippers team. And just in general, the Clippers being well coached. Well, now you come up against an even better version of that in OKC. And I think you absolutely need to kind of sincerely think about how you upgrade OKC's defense from the regular season to the postseason based on what you saw in that Pelican series. They made life absolutely miserable from the guards. And again, you have a situation here where 90% of the offensive creation is coming from two players who are guards here. And while Luka is a bigger guard, and certainly you can't just out-physical him, the length and the ability to kind of send multiple waves of people, including Lu Dort, who is one of the bigger, just like, I will be a absolute pest and make your life miserable kind of defender, is going to be exciting to see how Luka handles that. And I think it's going to take him a couple of games to solve it. So Thunder defending home court in game one and game two is my expectation. I think I bet them to take a lead into game three as well. I think that one was minus 125 that I bet, and it's out to minus 143, and I think that's a strong play as well. So I think the Thunder can take the first two here while the Mavs figure out exactly how they want to run their offense against this very, very dynamic and flexible defense. And I don't know that it's going to be a short series in favor of the Thunder, but I'm not going to be surprised if it is.
10 seconds, Drew. Are the Nuggets done?
I think yes. The guard health situation is an absolute disaster for them, particularly in this matchup. So don't know exactly how they solve that.
Our friend and yours, Drew Dinsick, find him over at NBC Sports Edge, also on his podcast, Deep Dive Podcast, or the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. Drew, appreciate the time, buddy, and good luck tonight.
All right, best of luck, man.
Woo, boy. Yeah, he said they're done. We kind of think they're done, Kelly. Think that they might be done.
Yeah, I think they are.
The champs might be done.
It's tough. I wanted a great series, though.
NFL Week 1 starters are available over at DraftKings. We'll talk those when we come back here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you don't already have a VSiN Pro account, do we have a deal for you? $199. We're going to give you 14 months instead of 12. 2 months absolutely free. You go to VSiN.com/subscribe. You type in ANG as the promo code. And when you do, for just $199, we're going to give you 14 months of VSiN Pro. That is what we do here. Giving the 2 months for free. It's our spring special. VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code ANG. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin on the desk with me, and it's been so long. I remember that mustache like it was yesterday. You can find him over at Fangraphs. Paul Sporer, buddy, I'm so glad to see you.
It's great to see you, Matt.
I mean, seriously, it's been a hot minute. I know a lot of people want to talk to you about teams that you like, but I actually want to talk to you about some teams. Maybe are they done or are they not? I want to kind of get your gut feeling on all of this. And I'll start in the AL West, where we see the Houston Astros 10 games under 500 right now. You see the Rangers starting to play a little bit better. This Mariners team, great pitching staff. You saw Brian Wu that's made some rehab starts. He's about to join this rotation, make it even better with all that. The A's are no longer pushovers for whatever. I don't know why. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're actually winning some games here and there. Have they dug themselves? I know there's a lot of baseball to play, but given where we sit with this division and what's going on with the Astros, have they dug themselves too big of a hole at this point?
Yeah, I kind of think they have. It's not impossible, and they are the kind of team that could emerge from this, but I'm not going to fence it on this one. The data's really ugly here. 12-22, 353 win percentage. You just don't really climb out of this hole, generally speaking. So it would be notable. It'll be something that we talk about. You know, we always reference 2019 for the Nats. That's because it's memorable because of how much of a long shot it was. That's the mode that Houston's in right now. And basically what they're going to need is Fromber to get fully on track, Verlander to be good. They need Christian Javier back yesterday. And basically Brown needs to get going to cover the pending regression of Ronel Blanco. I think Ronel Blanco can be a perfectly capable 4-5, but he's been a 209 ERA, 096 whip, and they've basically wasted that. That's really unfortunate. The offense is still pretty solid, and I like some of the guys that are calling up, like this Loperfido, I think could be decent covering for Abreu. It's a solid offense, but the pitching isn't there, and I don't know that they're going to turn it around in time. I'd be very nervous if I was holding any Houston tickets right now, even just for the playoffs, let alone anything bigger.
Not as dire as the Houston situation, but the Blue Jays find themselves 3 games under .500 in a division of death, basically, at this point, with the Orioles, the Yankees, Red Sox playing a little bit above expectation. The Rays always figure it out. They've figured out how to make two different guys now good again. Zach Littell's is good and whatever. Pepio's good for this Rays team. They can't hit right now, Paul, and you look at this, the pitching staff doesn't really inspire you a ton either, but that said, they have scraped together 16 wins to only 19 losses. Are you as confident that the Blue Jays are done as you are the Houston Astros?
Not quite as confident, but I am nervous more about the Blue Jays' path, being that they are in that AL beast, as you talk about there. You know, they're the worst team at 16-19, and they're not a bad ball club. Like, I don't think they're a terrible ball club, but they are sitting in last because of how difficult it is. The Orioles are a force. They're showing early on that last year was no fluke. The Yankees are playing excellent ball. The Red Sox pitching is really strong. If they get any hitting, they're competitive. But even if they don't, if they just kind of meander around 500, they're a difficult play every time. You got to run into them. And like you said, the Rays treading water at 500 before they maybe make a surge. So yeah, I do have some concerns about Toronto, more because of their lot in life than anything that they're doing. Houston's is more about their talent. Toronto's more about what they have to overcome, and I'm just not sure that they're going to have the horses. The offense isn't where it's been in past years, right? If you play fantasy DFS, you worry about Toronto usually with pitchers. We're not there right now. I'm not running away from Toronto with a pitcher I like, even like a mid-tier type of guy, and that's their biggest issue. Their pitching's actually been pretty interesting outside of Bassett, who I think is going to be fine. It's their lack of hitting.
Paul, what about some of these teams off to hot starts? Is there anybody that you are not fully bought into? I think you're probably bought into the Orioles, but how about the Yankees, the Guardians, the Twins, the Royals? How about we go down a little bit further into the NL, maybe the Brewers, the Cubs? Are there any of these teams that are sitting up there several games over 500 that you're not really sold on?
I'll tell you, I like this Brewers team, and even when they were making moves, I wanted to stay bought in, you know, when they were trading Burns, because I thought that was a win now type of deal, getting Ortiz and DL Hall. That was a solid return for 1 year of Burns. I don't know that they've got the pitching horses, though. Shouts to Bryce Wilson. Great outing yesterday. Has been looking great. I think he has a chance to do some damage against St. Louis this weekend. But Freddy Peralta, and then you jump down to Bryce Wilson as the number two, Colin Ray, Joe Ross, Tobias Myers. and there's no cavalry coming, right? There's, you know, you're not getting Woodruff back this year. Even Wade Miley's out. I'd be more comfortable with him as a number two. DL Hall himself is hurt, and even still, I don't think he's the fixer. So they're playing well. I like the offense, but I am nervous about Milwaukee's pitching unless they add pieces, which they could certainly do. So we'll have to see if they do that. I think they will need to stay ahead of the Cubs there and really maintain themselves atop that Central, especially with Cincinnati lurking as well. Pittsburgh, if they can figure out their offense, they've got some interesting pitching. I will say this Cleveland team, I'm wearing the cap right now, I love what they're doing, and they're doing it differently than normal, where they're actually hitting instead of pitching. The problem is, I think that's going to catch up. I think the hitting will regress, and I don't know if they've got the pitching. Now, they're usually pretty good at, you know, cultivating a guy or two out of thin air, and Ben Lively might be that guy for them right now. But I don't know if he alone, even if he does sustain, can be the difference, because Tanner Bibee isn't exactly building on last year. Logan Allen's been rough. Tristan McKenzie's actually looked really good in the three starts since we learned of the UCL tear, but that's always scary. How torn is it? Is it on hanging by a thread, or is it a standard partial tear, which many guys are pitching with? That's the weird thing about that news, is tons of guys have a partially torn UCL. We just don't know to what degree. So I am nervous about the guards, even though they've looked great so far. They have some great offensive pieces, but there's a potential crash there if things don't break their way and they develop some pitching to kind of backfill after losing Bieber for the year.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and since I've not been in this seat, and Paul, I haven't been able to talk to you about the baseball season heading in. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you have a Scooble Cy Young ticket.
I do.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you have one.
Yeah. Remarkably safe bet there. Yeah, you were minus 5,000 on that bet, because yes, of course I do. Love Scooble, had to get it in there. You know, 80 innings coming off last year, and yet the market was still hot on him. And I totally get it. Usually you're going to get better odds on a guy that's sitting, you know, with just half a season. And instead, everyone saw how great that half season was with him and said, this is going to be the year. And I think because he's had foolish seasons before, even if they weren't great, like 2021, he threw 149 in the third innings, 4.34 ERA, 1.26 whip, but he's shown he can take almost 30 turns. It was 29 starts, 31 appearances that year. So I think there's confidence in Scooble, and he has picked up right where last year left off. He looks incredible. The pitching is carrying that team. For the love of God, please don't let something stupid like win totals hurt him, because the offense doesn't support him. We've actually got a bullpen too. I'm a big Tigers fan. For those that don't know, the bullpen is actually pretty good too. That's really encouraging, because as long as I've been a fan, even when the Tigers were good in the mid 2010s there, the bullpen was not the part. It was the offense and the starting pitching. So to actually have a bullpen they can rely on is good for Scooble, because even though the wins shouldn't matter, and we've seen guys with low wins totals win the Cy Young, you know, it can be a tiebreaker. And if somebody's like 22-4 and he's sitting there at 16-13, stupidly it would cost him votes even if it shouldn't. So I love where Scooble's at. He looks good. Obviously the tickets now are probably very difficult to get at anything close to a good price.
Paul, it's the sneaky bet over in the NL Rookie of the Year to go ahead and put a ticket in on Paul Skeens. It seems like the Pirates have stretched him out now. They were obviously limiting his innings early on because they were going to go ahead and promote him. They didn't want to burn all those innings. It's three inning start. Now he comes up. Now he's actually starting to make full starts here, getting full pitch count stuff in. Been unhittable in AAA so far. Thrown more pitches of 100-plus miles an hour than the next guy by double. It's unbelievable with Skeens. He's going to get called up. He's probably going to fare pretty well. Is that the sneaky ticket, or do you think that some of these other guys just have too much of a leg up on him?
No, I think it is a very sneaky ticket, and I do like that. Get in before the hype really changes the price on you. I'm sure it's not bargain basement. I'm actually not sure where his market has been trending. Like it is still sneaky, though, because a lot of times guys want the players that are going to be up all year, and you're going to get somebody who's going to be looking at 4.5 months of work instead. But you can do a Rookie of the Year in that time. It's a lot harder to do anything MVP or Cy Young-wise, but Rookies of the Year, they can be 4-month guys. They can be 3-month guys if they're good enough. So Paul Skeens is definitely somebody I'm looking at there in the National League, because he could come up, light the league on fire, and really help carry this team. I will say, though, his teammate is the guy who might usurp him there, Jared Jones, and he will have the volume advantage, although I don't know how much, because it might be a situation where they slow Jones down while they amp up Skeens in terms of the volume of workload. Depends how competitive they are. If they're competitive, I think you've got to pitch both of them consistently. But if they fall off, I think Jones will lose playing time at the end of the year. He'll start going three innings, whereas Skeens might then be trending up five, six innings apiece.
Paul, I could sit here and talk baseball with you for another three. I wish we had the time, but we don't. We run out here. You can find his work over at Fangraphs, over on the Twitter machine at Spore. He is Paul Spore. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Thanks, gentlemen. Take care.
Oh, the baseball talk, Kelly. I know you were sitting over there just soaking it all in.
Hey, man. Great conversation always with Paul.
Yeah, you know what it is. We'll wrap it up when we come back here on the Numbers Game.